ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Australia's alliance with the United States has been the linchpin of our country's foreign policy for decades.
We value the unbroken friendship between the Australian and the American peoples.
But between the wars and the tariffs and the unpredictability, are we growing apart?
You know who else didn't help us? Australia.
Join me, Hamish McDonald.
And me, Geraldine Doogue, as we ask, do we still need the alliance? Search for Global Roaming on ABC Listen or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hello, it's The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford. Those are the Red Spirit Singers, members of the Ute Nation in Utah in the United States. The group has more than a dozen members and has real history here, almost 40 years old and featuring generations of the families who first founded the group. We'll be talking to AJ Knipp, one of the founders. He'll be my guest later on this hour. And speaking of history, over his decades as a songwriter from the Go-Betweens to his solo career, Robert Forster has, I suppose, been responsible for more than his fair share of critically lauded releases. His 2023 album was called The Candle and the Flame, and it was quite an emotional and intimate affair. It was written after his wife, Karin Bäumler, was diagnosed with stage 4 ovarian cancer. On his latest album, Strawberries, Robert Forster and his wife are in a more playful mood. He went to Sweden to work with a band of Swedish indie musicians, and now he's bringing them to Australia to perform with him on tour. Let's listen to the title track from the album. This is Strawberries.
Someone ate all the strawberries.
Someone could have been me.
They tasted out of the ordinary.
What can ordinary be?
What can ordinary be?
I once owned a Brett Whiteley.
As it gazed down on your life,
as it gazed down on my life.
Miracle days of happiness,
joyful moments of bliss.
Miracle days of togetherness, sealed with your tender kiss. We were feeling something like this.
We went to the mountain.
We saw it and we can't resist. It took time to recover.
Back from the edge of the knife.
There are many ways to discover
the road back.
The road back out of the night. We can go back to what we were.
Something like this. out of the ordinary.
What can ordinary be?
What can ordinary be? What can ordinary be? What can ordinary be?
Well, that's the title track, Strawberries, from Robert Forster's latest album. It came out last year, and we heard Robert and his wife, Karin Bäumler, doing the vocals there. And it's a pleasure to welcome Robert back to the music show. You know that a show has been going possibly too long when neither presenter nor guest can remember whether they've spoken to each other before. I'm sure we have, Robert.
I honestly don't know. But it might have been once, but if it was, then it was closer to the start of the 32 years than at the end.
I think
that's all I can say.
Was. Yeah. I think it was. I think that a sort of box set of CDs had just come out with the kind of complete go-betweens.
Ah, yeah. Yep.
Is that possible?
Yes, that is possible. That puts it back a while, but yes.
It certainly does, yes.
Yeah.
Well, anyway, welcome back in that case.
Thank you.
I like that song. It belongs to a tradition of songs, doesn't it? I'm trying to be thinking, this is Nancy Sinatra and Lee Hazlewood. It's Johnny Cash and June Carter doing Jackson. Yeah. And there's loads and loads of others.
Yeah.
Did you feel part of that tradition when you did the song?
Well, they're both duet partners that my wife and I like a great deal. It was her idea too. I wrote the song on holidays, and so Karin and I were at the beach and we were there for 2 weeks, and I just started with the melody and then I wrote the lyric and I was playing. It was that moment of wonder when you write a new song, and because we're just in this apartment by the beach, we really started to work on it together, and Karin and I were like bouncing back, you know, verses and lines. And she just said, you know, like, we've never really done a duet. And she was arranging lines and we worked over, you know, just a holiday mode. And so that's how it came to be. But we're great fans of that form of two people singing with June and Johnny. You know, they're an actual couple. And, you know, obviously so are Karin and I. So it was a holiday song and it's got tradition.
Yeah, it sounds like a holiday project.
And
there's,
yes,
there's a bit of William Carlos Williams in there as well, isn't there? I have eaten the plums that were in the icebox.
Yes. That's exactly true. And that's a very good reference. And which I didn't know of. I didn't know that poem. It's been pointed out to me by one other person. And I've read the poem since, and it's exactly that. It's a private pleasure that you know you're sort of crossing the line, but you can't help yourself.
You can't help yourself, that's right.
No.
Forgive me. You recorded this album in Sweden. Why?
I met a guy called Peter Morin, who's in a band called Peter, Bjorn and John, who are quite well known for a song called Young Folks. And they were an early 2000s, they're still going, Swedish pop band, if you will. And I met him at the Splendor in the Grass Festival in 2016 up near Byron Bay. And he was a fan of what I did and I was a fan of his. And so a friendship started and he said he could put a band together for me in Scandinavia if I wanted to do a couple of shows there. And the band that he put together is the band that we've done some shows in Europe since 2017, but we finally came to make the album that we always wanted to make in 2024. And basically the two musicians and himself with Peter is the band I played with the whole time. So he put this band together for a one-off in 2017. And it was straight away a great band. It just had that magic, you know, first time in the practice room, you're playing and it's just like, wow, this is just great. And we wanted to do an album and finally we did it in 2024 in Stockholm. So I flew over and they know the Stockholm scene really well in studios and practice rooms, etc. And then we've done a tour in 2025 in Europe on the album. And I really wanted to come to Australia. I didn't want to do an acoustic tour on the record. And I wanted the band, the way it was in the studio, the way it's been live, that I know it. to come to Australia, and finally we've been able to get it. And we're coming, we're playing with the Swedes in September.
The Swedes is a great name for a band anyway.
It is. Actually, a funny little story was when we were playing in Brighton, Nick Cave came and saw us play, and the next day a Swedish, and there was a photo taken with the band and Nick, and a Swedish journalist sort of texted the Swedes and went, Robert Forster and the Bad Swedes, as a, which I immediately put, you know, like a kibosh on. I just went, oh, look, no, we can't, you know, like, you know, we can't do that. You know, Nick's come to the show. I just think that's a little bit too, but yeah, it's a funny line.
It is a funny line. You say you played live, but you played live in the studio too, didn't you? I mean, this is essentially a yes. live recording.
Yes, yes, it is. It's a way that part of it is economics. Like, you know, for me to fly over, the budget can only go so far, so we have to record quickly, but not to the detriment of the record. And I've just come over the last period of time to really appreciate that. And the main thing is that I've come to accept that I can do first take vocals. Because normally in a recording situation, vocals can take 2 days to do if you do them all in one block, or at least one day, which we couldn't afford. But I didn't want to do that anyway. I've just come to the feeling where if I need a big room, and so the separation and very much like the 60s and 70s or the 50s, and I can sort of play and sing at the same time, and I'm just sort of confident enough with that that the vocal that I do will be kept, and basically four instruments are going down at the one time.
And some of these vocals are pretty wild, actually, on yeah. this album. I'm thinking of Diamonds, for instance, oh, yeah. where yeah. this kind of creepy kind of falsetto
yeah.
comes in, and the band goes insane behind yeah. you or yeah. around you. It's nice to think that that was all happening, you know, in a sense, not exactly even pre-planned, but in the moment.
It was very close to that. Like, I've never sung in falsetto on a record ever. And it was when I was writing the song, I realized that I wrote a chord change and a melodic change that was virtually out of my register, which is a really hard thing to do because your voice is not going there naturally in your normal register. But it was a very high note, which I could do, and I just thought, well, the songwriting has forced me into this. But there's a lot of in-the-moment stuff with that, like to actually get there and do it the sustained way that it is. It really helped that the band was there and we were doing it in real time.
Yes, I'm sure it did. You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford. I'm talking to Robert Forster. Maybe we could talk about composing songs.
Yeah.
You were just saying there about writing, you know, chord changes and how it sent your voice into an uncomfortable area. Do you, because you are now a novelist as well,
yeah.
I wonder whether these are completely separate sorts of processes for you, or whether you think of yourself as a storyteller when you're writing songs.
That's come in, the storytelling side has really come into my writing over the last 3 or 4 or 5 years. It's something that's growing. It probably goes back a little bit longer than that. And I think it primarily came from, like, I'm in my late 60s now, I'm 69, and I think it came to a point where I was just sick almost of writing about myself. You know, like, there was a real, like, I've done that, I will keep on doing that for certain things, but I wish I could find a new way of writing, because I think that I was just tired of songs and song titles with the word I in it, and me, and I just wanted to take pressure off. I wanted to get away from that. And I didn't really know how to do it. But I started to find an avenue through writing stories more and more, and I found that I could do it. And I was writing the music that could, because you need the music to tell a story, you know, like if you're writing something that's like some sort of fast post-punk or speed metal thing, you can't get any lyrics virtually in any way. So you can't really tell a story. So, you know, like it's got to be a slower song probably. It's got to have a quite flowing melodic thing going through it. And then you can start to, it gives you space to tell a story. And so I've been writing a little bit more of that style anyway. So it's sort of came together that I could fit words in and become, you know, my songs become a little bit more detached and story-based.
But you can still use the first person because you do that, for instance, on Foolish I Know, when there's obviously you, but but it's written in the first person.
Yes, exactly. And this was the great discovery that I could actually put myself in. And because naturally you're picking out things in the scenery, so to speak, that relate to you. So you're actually pre-building your own story into the song by your choices, but you're not, it's he or him, or you do like in Foolish I Know, an I that is not really me. But these possibilities, although they're quite obvious, didn't really occur to me, or how much power you can do with it, until I was actually doing it, until I was writing the songs.
And so the character emerges in the process of the songwriting.
Yes, it does. It does. And you surprise yourself with the choices because it's opened up. It's not like, oh, this is about me. And immediately, which I'd realized, that narrows things, where if you're going in and you're putting yourself in a little bit, but it's not you and you're doing pronouns, it means that you can suddenly be a lot more playful and you can go in and out of the song, which in terms of your, you know, what you're putting into it as a person. And I found that, I find it really quite attractive.
Yeah. Randy Newman on this show talked about how, because obviously he writes a lot of first person songs that are not him. You know, he's not the racist or the drunk or the person who hates dwarfs. He discovers these characters at the piano. He sits and messes around and finds chords and finally, you know, that person starts speaking to him through the music on the piano.
Yeah. I think that's underestimated, how much a songwriter, once you're working with melody, that, you know, like you're writing a song, before you've got a lyric, music is very suggestive. Like if you take a song like, say, Bridge Over Troubled Waters, that is a perfect combination of music and lyric talking to each other. And I'd imagine that Paul Simon wrote the music first. And when you listen to the lyric, you can't imagine any other lyric working with that melody. And it's because, I believe, that's what Paul Simon got from the melody. It's suggestive. And it's the same with Randy Newman. Like, he'd be fiddling around the piano and get something, and the melody would start to, you know, is this a comic song? Is this more serious? How funny is this? How much is this dry? You get a lot as a songwriter from just the music, what it's telling you.
Yes, yes. You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. My guest is Robert Forster. The last album, Candle in the Flame, came from a pretty rough patch in your life. It was COVID and also Karen's cancer diagnosis.
Yeah.
Did you set out to do something, you know, brighter and more adventurous this time around? Was that a conscious decision?
No, this was completely left field. I had the songs written for an album, and then Karen got a severe cancer diagnosis, and we started to play the songs at night. You know, like it goes back to Strawberries. You know, like sitting around talking. I'll play a song, she'll sing. And she also played Glockenspiel on one song. And it was just sort of, we were doing this before she had a major operation over a couple of months. And we'd sort of worked up this little repertoire, and we decided to just record the songs as a historical document within the family. And then Karen and I were listening. So we went to the studio for one day, did 8 hours and did 8 songs. And then with our son and a woman by the name of Adele on bass. And we just, Karen and I started to listen to the songs, and two of them, we thought they were perfect and that we were really surprised. We just thought these could be released, you know, like they're so fresh and so unusual. And that was the starting point of the album. She then had the operation, and then she went into chemotherapy, and we started to, in this mad moment, which was mainly generated by her, let's do more recordings. Let's do this process where we're just playing at home in the lounge room, and then we, every couple of weeks or months, we go into a studio and we just record it live again, and we just pick the best of these live tracks. That's basically how the album happened. Very unusual way to make a record.
Very unusual, yes. Mm. But very successful, I think.
Oh, thank you. No, we like it a great deal.
This tour with the Swedes in Australia, you're doing, of course, you're doing Strawberries.
Yeah.
But you're also doing, because Strawberries is only 35 minutes long, you're doing the back catalogue too.
Yes.
How does that go with the Swedes? I mean, do they inject new life? Do they find things in the songs you didn't know were there?
Yeah. They're masters. They can go through and energize my solo songs and go between songs. They really are. And that's when we did some tours and played shows back in the late 2010s. Because, you know, like obviously Strawberries didn't exist. They bring the same energy. These are players, like the three of them are in their late 40s. So there's a generational shift. But they have a total understanding of what I do. And they really can play anything from my back catalogue and play it really well with a lot of verve and, you know, sensitivity too. And so, I mean, and that's with the tour, you know, like we've really pushed it to a 2-hour show, and we go through, it's the longest show I've ever done. And it just goes back through a lot of the past, and it all feels like one thing.
Good to hear. Robert Forster, thank you very much for coming on The Music Show.
Andrew, it's been an absolute pleasure again.
We should do this again sometime.
In about 18, 20 years, perhaps.
Maybe. Let's go out with another song from Strawberries. This is All of the Time.
There's propaganda and there's truth. There's a feeling that I get when I'm with you. There's an ocean turning blue. And there's a feeling that I get when I'm with you. And the moonlight, yeah, well, it's too bright. And the sunshine is divine. And the reason that I need you is that I love you. Surveillance that no one knew, and there's a feeling that I get when I'm with you. Lonely nights and what to do, and there's a feeling that I get when I'm with you. And the moonlight, yeah, well, it's too bright, and the sunshine is divine. That I love you all of the time, all of the time, all of the time, all of the time. Da 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 da
there's a feeling that I get when I'm with you. There are sensations that just aren't true. And there's a feeling that I get when I'm with you. At the moonlight, yeah, it was too bright. And the sunshine, well, it's divine. And the reason that I need you is that I love you. And the reason that I need you is that I love you. And the reason that I need you is that I love you. All of the time, all of the time, all of the time, all of the time. Da 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 da. Da 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 da. All of the time. All of the
All of the Time from Robert Forster's latest album, Strawberries. And as you heard, the Swedes are coming to Australia and Robert is on tour starting in Sydney on the 10th of September and then on to Melbourne and Brisbane. And you'll find a link to the dates on the Music Show's website. It's the Music Show you're listening to. I'm Andrew Ford. We're going to hear 13 singers and 10 drummers clustered around a giant drum that's played by the group. The friend of the show, Ian Brennan, said that this was perhaps the loudest thing he has ever recorded. So you can picture that as we head into this next piece of music. The Red Spirit Singers, members of the Ute Nation. They're one of the peoples of the Great Basin between the Sierra Nevada and the Rocky Mountains. And since the mid-19th century, they have been restricted to Utah. The singers themselves have been around since the 1980s, with a new generation carrying on the music of their family. And in a moment, I'm going to be joined by AJ Knipp. He's a founding member of the group. We begin with Veterans Song from their new album, Land of the Sun.
Oh,
That's Veterans Song, and that's performed by Red Spirit Singers from the album The Land of the Sun. And I'm very pleased to welcome to the music show AJ Knipp. AJ, thank you very much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
The Ute people, where can you locate yourselves for us?
We're located on the northeast corner of the state of Utah in the United States. We're on a 3.5 million acre reservation, and we have control of our water, our own gaming, meaning big game type of we control our own wildlife, our hunting rights, and there's about 3,000 members of the Ute Indian tribe. And that's where the reservation is located. And it's technically called the Uinta and Ouray Ute Indian Reservation.
And the title of the album, Land of the Sun, where does that come from? What does that mean?
That would mean like you would refer it to a certain Ute people. Not necessarily all of them, but say a certain camp or a certain band of Ute that may have lived on a certain side of the mountains, and how our elders would refer to different camps, different bands among the Ute tribe. They would be identified either how they camped, what location of the mountains, if it was the sunny side of the mountain, then they would be referred to like how where it's mentioned, the land of the sun. Hmm. If they were camped on the sunny side, or they would identify by what they ate primarily.
The Red Spirit Singers formed in 1988, and it continues now with younger generations joining. Could you say something about the importance of keeping this music alive? What does it mean for the Ute people, this music?
It's very important. It's very important, as I mentioned earlier, that my people number 3,000 on down, but thousands of years of language is now dwindling down with those numbers. Thousands of years of our native language is starting to dwindle down. So along with songs and language, it's very important for us to maintain a certain level of that so that we can be able to carry that on to the next generations to keep that alive. Because 3,000 members compared to the entire world, that say a handful speak Ute, that's pretty scary. And we don't want to get to the point where it's extinct, where it's gone for good. We're trying to keep it. We're trying to keep it through song the best way. We're trying to keep it through oral traditions and just keep it strong the best we can.
And young people speak this language still? Or is it a struggle?
It's a struggle at this point. It's a struggle. We're trying to find different, say, avenues that young people could be able to understand it. We're just using certain technology app. We're trying to, say, integrate it to a platform where they best understand it with nowadays technology. But it is a struggle currently.
The songs themselves, how far back do they go?
The songs go back. Some of them go way back, particularly the Bear Dance. Those go way back. Powwow is an intertribal type of celebration that's celebrated amongst all tribes of the United States. So you could find a powwow from the East Coast to the West Coast. Anywhere in the United States, anywhere within Native America, Native communities, they'll hold a powwow, which is basically a gathering to bring the people together to create a circle and have a celebration with the music. Now, that particular gathering can happen any time of the year. And it's got history from different tribes' perspective on the dances, where they originated. However, the bear dance that's on the album, the songs that come from that, they're just Ute. No other tribe in the United States practices the bear dance the way we do. So it's special to our tribe because we're the only ones that celebrate it, and we only celebrate and sing and have a bear dance during the spring months of our spring, our cycle here, which is in May. And it's just original to our tribe. There's no one can actually give us a specific time, but it's just passed on to the generations, thousands of years.
Well, it's spring now in the southern part of Australia, so I think we should listen to a little of the bear dance.
Brag.
That's the Ute Bear Dance. It comes from a new album, extraordinary album, called Land of the Sun, Red Spirit Singers, and I'm speaking to one of them, AJ Knipp. When we listened to Veterans Song at the beginning, we heard a drum. What was the percussion in Bear Dance?
The percussion in Bear Dance is a metal drum with rasped, notched sticks that are notched similar to a rasp, and then a pipe rolling over that. The sound of that represents the sound of the thunder and the bear growling. The way the story goes is the bear awakes during the spring through the first sound of the thunder and from his hibernation. And he's celebrating the new year. In Native culture, we look at the spring as the start of the new year, and end in the winter, according to our type of history on how a year is calculated, how it's outlined.
You're listening to The Music Show on ABC Radio National. I'm Andrew Ford, and I'm speaking to AJ Knipp, who is one of the Ute people from Utah in the United States. We're talking about this album, Land of the Sun, by the Red Spirit Singers. Ian Brennan, who recorded this album with you, said that the music was the loudest thing he'd ever recorded. And I wonder if you could tell us, as one of the singers, AJ, what it feels like to be in the middle of that sound.
That's kind of hard to explain, because you get a sound coming from a drum, the percussion of the drum is loud. Then on top of that, you have 10 singers with their sound and their voices all together harmonizing. Yeah, it could get pretty loud. It could get pretty loud. And when you're in the middle of that, you feel the energy, not say in front, but you feel the energy on your chest vibrating from each of the singers and the sound of the drum. You feel that. At that point, then you just kind of like you go with the sound that everyone brings. At that point, it's a really powerful feeling once we all get to the point where everybody's singing together, and the songs and the drum could be heard hundreds of feet away. Hundreds of feet away, people comment on that. I heard that drum almost like a mile away, and I could hear you guys singing. At times, that's what type of people say from time to time when hearing us sing at any event. It's pretty powerful.
Can you tell us about the drum, the one we heard at the beginning and we'll hear again at the end of our conversation? It's 'cause it's one drum, isn't it, but played by a lot of people.
Right. That drum is probably across from one point to the other. It's about 28 inches, 20 inches deep, made by a rawhide from a beef cow. And it's tied on the sides with the straps. And the sound that it brought is when that hide is after it's applied to the ring, the drum ring, dried. It's a pretty powerful sound because you got to kind of understand where you want to set up a drum at times, because you could ultimately create an echo that could be overcoming too at the same time. If you're in a bigger say room, so to say. But that one there particularly was a new drum that was gifted to our family, to our group, the Red Spirit Singers, by my cousin's sister. Here in the United States, we don't refer to our cousins as cousins. We refer to them as sisters in our culture. So there's no word in our language for cousin or someone like that. So we take them as your brother and your sister. Mm. Anyhow, it was one of my sisters that had gifted us that drum now 2 years ago, and it's a fairly new drum, and it's got good power to it. It's got a good sound to it. You can barely hit it, and it'll give that type of sound off. You might come across some older drums that maybe the hide, the cover on it is a little wore out, so it might take a little harder in order for it to get the sound that you're used to. That one particularly. Yeah, you don't need to hit it so hard, and it makes a good sound, even though that it could be a cold setting, meaning chilly, might be a little cold wherever we're at, and that sound, the sound of that drum will still be clear. Or it could be a hot day, and that sound of the drum will still carry nice and clear.
We're going to finish by listening to a track on this album called Meet Me at the Ute Petroleum. I'm assuming that at least some of this song is not particularly traditional.
That's right. That song actually came back. I composed that song back in 2005, I want to say. And around about that era, I'm right now, my position with the company, I'm a chief operating officer. And it took some years to get to this point where I'm at. And when I first started my work with the tribal enterprises that we have that oversees our retail locations within our reservation, I first started at that Ute Petroleum C store. And that C store was fairly new at that point. It's early 2000s. I want to say anywhere from 2002. I want to say right about that area. It was a fairly new C store, a convenience store. And it's located right there in the middle of one of the bigger communities on our reservation. I was working the early years as a stalker. And it took me so long, almost like 29 years to get to where I'm at. In those early years, I was a stalker at that location. And I could say, you know, just rural Utah, you know, that's kind of like a focal point right there in the community. People right off the highway, the major highway, people stop and get gas. You can see anybody, friends, relatives there day and night. I'll get and feel any time of the day. And that song was meant to kind of like, you know, just kind of make that point. Hey, meet me at the U Petroleum. That's where I'll be. And it turned out to be a good song. Everybody really likes that because, like I say, it's the local gas station there, and it's pretty busy all the time.
And it also shows that this tradition lives on, that it can still be put to good use.
Yes.
AJ, it's been very good to talk to you. Thank you very much for joining me on The Music Show.
Thank you for having me.
Red Spirit Singers with Meet Me at the Ute Petroleum, and it comes from their album Land of the Sun. That's almost it for today, but before we go, I've got a bit of news for you. When I was in my third year presenting the music show, I said to the producers, look, I think 3 years might be enough. I wanted to spend all of my time composing. And so I said, I'm going to go at the end of the year. And I don't actually remember what happened after that. I mean, that was 1997. And evidently, I'm still here. It's now year 32. But I am thinking that it really is time to go. I'm still enjoying myself. But it's harder to get my head out of composing to record interviews. And then it's hard to get my head back in again. And it's probably an age thing, but I find I need long, uninterrupted stretches to write music. Somebody told me recently that Dickens said that if he had a 4 o'clock appointment, his entire writing day was already ruined. And I know the feeling. So I'm not going immediately. You're going to have to put up with me for another 4 months. But at the end of the year, I'm off to realise last century's dream and become a full-time composer. C, my producer, has suggested that I make a list of favourite interviews from the past 3 decades, and we might listen to the odd one over the rest of the year without, I hope, becoming too solipsistic. And we'll start next week with Seymour Bernstein, the great American classical pianist who actually died earlier this year at the age of 99. We talked to him when he was 89, and he was a very wise fellow, particularly on the subject of overcoming performance nerves. So that's next week. And we're also going to explore the voice of the voice. We're looking at the career and music of John Farnham. The chance to turn the pages off. We can write what we want to write. We gotta make ends meet before we get much older. The music show is produced by C. Benedict and Sky Kirkham. Technical production by Antonia Gauci, and the show is made on Gadigal, Gundungurra and Wurundjeri Woi Wurrung land.
Listening to an ABC podcast. Discover more great ABC podcasts, live radio, and exclusives on the ABC Listen app.